In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi folks, I'm Jack Kennedy and welcome once again to Farm Tech Talk, the livestock show. A drop of rain and slightly colder is making it feel a bit more like a normal spring, but most farmers are still very happy with the weather so far. Once again, I'm joined by Adam Woods, Darren Carty and Aidan Brennan to talk all things farming. As normal, to start, I have quickfire questions for Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, email your questions to farmtechtalk@farmersjournal.ie or WhatsApp 086-836-6465. Adam, one quick fire in for you. Ask Adam. He talked about using sex semen before on Tullamore Farm. Would he consider it now? Adam, talk to me, sex semen.
Yeah, we did look at it, Jack. We haven't looked at it since. I suppose at the time we hadn't access to good bulls. Speaking to some of the experts in that field and some of the AI stations, I'd imagine we'd have to go to twice a day AI on Tullamore Farm. I'd say timing is critical with sex semen. And I guess with two groups of cows, maybe in a group of heifers, at the moment it's working very well because cows are coming in at 12:30 or they're being ate at 1 o'clock or whatever. And it's one call in the day. Whereas if we move to two times during the day, it could be issues there for Sean, I suppose, working with a couple of groups. So we'd have to come around that in some way. I don't think it'd really work maybe twice a day AI down there, to be honest. It'd put a huge, bigger labour requirement, I suppose, bringing them in.
Okay, so maybe you have to match it with synchronization or something. Okay, listen, we'll come back to that again, I'm sure, Adam, as we get closer to the breeding season. And Darren, one quick fire in for you again. Let me just read it out here to make sure I get it right. Was going to spread lime and just want to ask, when is the lime scheme starting, announced in the budget, and is it open to all farmers? Thanks, love the show, Billy. Billy's asking Darren about the lime scheme. I haven't heard about it since recently, had you?
No, and we put in a question there recently, Jack, as well, and we haven't got anything back yet. I imagine it's like some of the other schemes that have been sort of caught up in the, I suppose, maybe delays in acres getting the new TAMS launched. And I'd say we probably should hear something in the coming months, but I'd say it'll be medium term rather than short term that we hear anything back. But look, I'll put in another question and we'll give an update next week if we hear anything back.
Nice one. Excellent. Thank you very much. Back to you in a minute. Aidan, Lauren asks, ask Aidan to remind me about the order I can spread urea and lime. Is there a certain time period necessary between spreading both?
Yes, Jack. So you're supposed to get the urea out first and then apply the lime maybe a week or so, a week or 10 days after you spread the urea. If you spread the lime first and then spread the urea, you're going to be more likely to lose some of the nitrogen that's in the urea. And the urea is the same as slurry. You know, so treat slurry and urea the same. So slurry, urea first, and then lime.
Excellent. Good and clear. Thanks for that, Aidan. Back to you in a minute, and we'll talk a bit more about the fertilizer job. Adam, start off with you. We might as well start in far-flung places. We were in UCD last week. This week, I want to talk to you about BSE in Brazil and what will it mean for Irish farmers.
Yeah, so we broke this story this morning, Jack, in terms of this case of ESE in Brazil. It could be good and bad, to be honest. It could be good in a case where China are quite fussy about BSE status. We found that out to our own behest in 2021 when we were locked out for almost 3 years out of that market. We just got back in there. But Brazil also were locked out of that market, but they were only locked out for a number of months in 2021. So there's two scenarios, I suppose. One is that Brazil is locked out of China, and that's massive because China or Brazil exported something like 2.6 million tons of beef in 2022. 1.2 million of that went to China, so it's a huge market for Brazilian beef. If they are locked out, it could mean that China needs to look elsewhere for supplies. I don't think we'd be able to mobilize supplies maybe quick enough. They'll look to other big exporting countries, like other countries in South America or the USA or whatever, and in terms of us being able to mobilize big volumes very, very quickly, but it may help the thing. What I'd be worried about, I suppose, is that volume of Brazilian beef, if it's not going to China, where is it going to go? And they'll target that maybe to the EU or the UK, and maybe undermine some of those high price markets with South American beef, and that could mean pressure for us. So I suppose we'll watch this one and play it out to see what happens when Brazilian authorities come back, whether it's an atypical case or what it is. It's gone for testing, and we'll know more, I guess, in the next few days.
Okay, and the impact that other countries will place on trade from Brazil as a result of it. Speaking of trade, Adam, what's our own trade like? What's the factory price like this week?
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I suppose they're playing games. Factories are playing games a little bit there, trying to flush cattle out. You know, some have dropped maybe bullock quotes back to 520. They were on 525. Heifers possibly back to 525 in some cases. But when the pressure comes on, or if you have numbers involved, you're still getting 525 for bullocks and 530 for heifers. Cows very, very strong. Speaking to Kieran Mealy up north, it's actually improved up there, and it's actually improved across the water too in the last 7 days. Upwards of 590 a kilo there for R4L steers across in the UK. So it's pretty solid. I'd say supplies is their problem, and some of them are talking about cutting back to 4 day weeks to try and maybe manage that supply through the next couple of weeks and months. So I think, look, if a couple of farmers rang and saying, look, do we sell or should we sell sooner than we should? But I don't think so. I'd still hold, and I think it'll stay pretty solid. I don't think it's going to come back much more than that. It might steady up, but I wouldn't panic yet.
Nice one. Adam, you've a couple of nice blacks there in grass behind you. Is there a scapping of stock out up around your country?
Yeah, there is a couple of weanlings, Jack, maybe your autumn calves, maybe petering out there around the sides of sheds and stuff, I suppose. It's still early up here. You know, February will be very early in the northwest in calving, but I've just said in the management this week, look at the ground conditions are exceptional, and exceptional for slurry spreading, and exceptional for getting out some stock. And it's a great chance to get some weanlings out, maybe, and kickstart some paddocks for growth coming on. There's definitely a lot of weanlings. The further south you go, more and more stock out. Yeah. So it's been a really good couple of weeks in terms of weather.
Yeah, no, very dry, exceptional, as you say, for February. I mean, speaking of that, and I suppose kickstarting grass, Adam, fertilizer, your guys, like, I mean, again, would they be holding off now, like, or would they be buying now, or would they, like, I mean, as you say, it's still early up your country for spreading the bag stuff.
Yeah, and look, we had a few calls on this as well, obviously, after last week's front page on fertilizer and maybe where it's going and what's going to happen. And looking across the water again, it's maybe starting to come back. Look, it might take a little bit longer time to come back here, but I'm saying to my lads, to ease off there, don't panic on fertilizer. I'd rather get slurry out, to be honest, Jack, and try and maybe coat the place, maybe 50, half the farm or 60%, you know, in terms of paddocks that you've grazed, ideal for slurry. Paddocks that were grazed very late in December, ideal for slurry. So I'd focus on that and getting out slurry now. The big volume of fertilizer doesn't start moving on dry stock farms until we start spreading for silage fertilizer, which is another month away. So I'd nearly bide the time there and I'd leave it. I wouldn't be panicking about buying fertilizer for another month or so. I think that's what I've been saying to people over the last couple of days anyhow.
Okay, and I touch off Aidan and Darren with it again in a few minutes, but I think the advice is to buy short, as you say. Buy if you really need it and want to move it, buy now on the for the good paddocks, as you, those that have a bit of grass. Yeah, so excellent. Adam, just update us in terms of Tullamore Farm, maybe on the calving side of things, and then maybe just touch off some of the other stuff, we'll say, in terms of where things are at, and maybe give us an idea of what you're doing on fertilizer or slurry down there.
Yeah, so look, the calving's going well, Jack. No issues down there. A lot of cows calving themselves. I think there's 26 or 27 cows calved. And in terms of weights there, we ran a piece in this week's paper on the weights of the heifers. I suppose calving heifers are 2-year-old. It's really important that we hit target weights for those heifers. And they're coming in there at 376 kilos. That's, I think it's 20 or 30 kilos ahead of where they were at this point last year. I suppose heifers are back home this year. They were in a rented shed up to this. And that has proved successful in terms of maybe monitoring them a little bit more and maybe being a little bit kinder to them maybe than we would have been in the past. So they're on target. They've done 0.88 kilo a day over the winter. They're up just 1.02 kilos a day since birth. So yeah, there's heifers up at sort of 470 kilos in that group. So really happy with the performance. I suppose some of the younger heifers and some of them maybe the Solaire heifers, they tend to be out of heifers and they tend to be a little bit smaller, and they're a little bit, they're not disappointing, but they're probably on the lighter end. They're in that 300, 320, and they'll probably struggle. We want heifers to be up at 60% of mature weight down there. Mature weight is somewhere around 720 kilos of a cow, so we want them to be up sort of 430 kilos. So they'll struggle probably to get to that. So whether we run them round as maiden heifers in the sale or whether we finish them off grass at the end of this year, we'll see. But all in all, we're pretty positive.
That mature weight of 720, that for me kind of feels high or sounds high relative to that, the type of cow like that you have down there. Like, talk to me.
Yeah, I suppose we went away in the last couple of years. We were working on a lot of dairy crosses coming in and limousine crosses coming in, but we've only taken in 3 or 4 of them over the last number of years. So the herd is getting more and more of suckler orientation and maybe, you know, three-quarter bred and more in terms of, suckler genetics and terminal genetics. And I suppose that's maybe increasing cow weight a little bit. But in the overall context of things, I suppose it's still on the lower end in terms of suckler cow weight out there in terms of mature cow weight. And look, that's a range, I suppose, from our first calf or second calf, you know, they're a lot lighter than that, but up at mature weight is around that 700, 720. So, it's probably the more and more, and we've shifted, not that it probably isn't taking effect yet, but we've shifted more to a little bit more terminal genetics, more balanced bull in the last 3 seasons, because we're finding our carcass weight of our bulls is at 380 kilos. We're struggling to get that higher. So we're shifting maybe a heavier carcass weight bull in, not losing out maternal traits or milk or fertility, but just picking bulls very, very carefully that they have a good carcass weight figure to try and lift that up a little bit. And maybe that's adding a little bit to cow weight as well.
Yeah. Adam, I lead on this, like in terms of, we were talking before about the Mart trade and it was on fire and this, that, and the other. And you were looking at your bulls, I suppose, down in Tullamore Farm and kind of saying to yourself, should you chance a couple of them in the ring, I suppose, to kind of lessen the load and to kind of, I suppose, de-risk your situation in terms of you have to buy a lot of feed for these bulls now over the next couple of months and feed prices high. So maybe take your winnings now and de-risk the situation. Where did you pumped on that, or have you made any kind of concrete decision just yet?
Yeah, we're sort of doing the figures there this week in terms of looking at what price, I suppose, they're making in the mart, and we're putting them in at 320. We're probably doing the top of the pops calves down there in terms of we're working on maternal bulls, and you know, they're not the real terminal Charlies or terminal Belgian blues. So we're putting them in at 320. We're putting them in at 430 kilos. That's 1376. Add in 420 a ton for meal on top of that, you're up at whatever, what is that, you're up at 1718. Add another 100 in for other costs in terms of straw and health and haulage and here and there and yonder, up at 1900. And then in terms of if we run through to, we'll say, 380 kilo carcass and beef price stays pretty steady at 550, we're sort of around that 2100 mark. So we think that there's still a margin there in finishing those bulls, and we probably a lot of the hard work done with them bulls as well, in terms of it's just now a matter of managing them through the next sort of 100 days and starting. And I'd be pretty confident on beef price. Look at, I could be eating my hat here in the first week of June, but anyway, I think we're gonna go that we've never done anything different down there in terms of selling the weanlings, and I think we'll keep going and just see what way it turns out. Yeah.
We'll remind you on that on the 1st of June. Thanks, Adam. Chat to you next week. Darren, last week we talked about the CAP magazine and we got lots of feedback on it. It was a super product in terms of, I suppose, bringing all that CAP information together that has been coming out over the last year and a half. You must be very happy to see it. And I'd say lots of farmers were talking to you about it.
Well, definitely happy, Jack, to get it over and done with. there was a few long nights, but look, it was well worth it given the, I suppose, the reaction we're getting from farmers, and that's what it's all about. Like we seen from the CAP Roadshow that there was a lot of interest in it, and it's good to see now farmers are using information. That I was even talking to, say, some of the companies that are involved in the leasing of entitlements, and they're saying that even some farmers that are, say, contacting them, they're saying that they've read this bit or they're seeing that there's big changes down along the line. That's something we're going to go into in big detail for next week. We had plans possibly to do it this week, but I think Thames sort of took precedent over that. But there's a good few questions coming in around it, Jack. So there is.
Okay. So, exactly. And we'll keep everyone posted on those changes and those questions and those answers, as you say, as we come along. I mean, you mentioned Thames. It was released under the radar last weekend, and we had lots of content online last weekend around Thames, the new investment scheme, the new tranche one. I suppose the details, the first details that we've got, Darren, in terms of what's included in this new Thames scheme.
Yeah, sure. I say, Jack, I describe it as the highly anticipated listing, that because that's what everyone was wanting to know, was what's in, what's out. Still a couple of bits we don't know, but to start with the positives first, there's almost something new for every sector. Like, and just to look at the headline, say, figures, there's cattle fencing, there's, say, farm roadways, there's underpasses. There's a brand new suite of measures, say, for horse owners. There's solar panels for sheds and also, say, for houses. There is increased rates of funding on a lot of the schemes. There's more machinery elements, say, for a lot of, say, tillage, maybe practices, slurry spreading. And even something as simple as, say, bale splitters. It's one of the things we talked about here after one of the cat meetings that came up at it as well. Pig and poultry housing, there's $500,000, say, if an investment ceiling there. So I think it's been broadly, say, welcomed. There is a couple of concerns, as I said, issues still around the dribble bar. It was confirmed that was excluded from the list, but the department have said to us that, look, they haven't closed the door on it, that there still is an option there to bring it back in. As we reported last week, they're looking at, say, the current research that's ongoing. Aidan probably take this up with you. I'd say around, say, the dairy side of things. Question marks there around, say, what exactly is going to be included for dairy equipment. The cap on cow numbers, we haven't seen the terms and conditions, we've only seen the listing, but we've heard, I suppose, from parliamentary questions or some other sources, is that it is looking like there will be a very definite cap on cow numbers. So there is a couple of concerns around that. I suppose, look, a lot of positives, Jack, but some sort of concerns to outweigh some of the positives.
Okay. And Darren, so as you said, all the information on this scheme that we have is pretty much in the journal this week. I mean, when are we expecting the terms and conditions, or have we any indication yet when kind of we might get those? Because as you say, we have half a story now, we have the listings, but we just don't have maybe some of the detail that's important yet.
Yeah, so the terms and conditions for the solar. So the solar scheme, it's going to operate in 10 entry routes. So I suppose there were 7 entry routes before. There was a dairy entry route, there's an organic entry route, there was animal welfare, there's now a farm safety entry route. So there's a couple of different ones. There's a new element for solar panels that opened on Wednesday. That's the only terms and conditions, Jack, we've seen. The minister has said that the first tranche will close on the 16th of June and that the other schemes will open between now and the 16th of June. If I was a betting man, I'd say we're not going to see anything on less equipment until they sort out whether they're going to keep dribble bars in or out, because that would create a lot of issues after that. There's probably a bit of to and fro still on the dairy equipment side. I know that MACRA have raised their opposition around the cap and cow numbers for young farmers, that type of thing. So I'd say there still is workings going on in some schemes. But you'd hope, Jack, that we're not going to see a big lag phase, and in the next few weeks, or definitely by mid-March, we'd see terms and conditions for some of the other schemes. Because I think there's the pressure now that the listing is out is only going to build. There's been a lot of pressure for information before now, and I think that's going to build from here on in.
Okay. And so, as you say, this first tranche, this tranche one of this new Thames 3 piece, it's closing the middle of June. Is that what you said?
Middle of June. And that's the biggest issue, Jack, I can see, is that this is, if I'm right, now I could be wrong, I think it's going to be way oversubscribed. Because there is such a pent up demand there. If you take all the farmers that reach, say, the maximum investment ceiling the last time out, but also there's a multitude of new items that are going to be very attractive to farmers. It'll depend on, I suppose, what level of funding is put towards each of those schemes, whether the department will decide to front load a bit of funding to bring through more people at the beginning. All of that is up for debate.
Okay, excellent. Last question, Darren, back to the core product, go back to sheep and lamb prices. What's the mood music this week in terms of lamb prices, where they are?
Sure, unfortunately, not good again, Jack. Like, quotes yesterday back 5 to 10 cents, and the week before, anywhere from 580 to 590. Lamb prices generally sort of €6 to 620 a kilo, 70 to 85 cents a kilo behind this time last year. And look at confidence, just I suppose, maybe at an all-time low. Like, we've talked before, Jack, around, say, prices being higher than where they have been in recent years. But, like, anybody feeding lambs at the moment, like, there's a lot of farmers talking about, is there going to be a boost from Ramadan? And that's one of the big questions I'm getting. I put a piece in management notes this week to say that, look, we can never know, but given the current state of where the trade is at, it's hard to see any quick turnaround. And if you're looking at, I just did one calculation, say, for management notes. If you're looking at concentrates, €465 a ton. And if a hogger is eating 1 to 1.2 kilos, it's costing €360 to €390 a week alone to keep that hogger. Like, so there's no point keeping, say, hoggets that have reached slaughter weight, or else their performance is stagnated, that they've reached what they're going to do like this. Because that, it's only compound issues, and you're putting good money, losing, I suppose, good money after more good money.
No, absolutely, 100%. So no good news on the lamb price front. And as you say, then that whole margin play that has been we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks, it's still under pressure. Right, excellent, Darren, 100%, leave it at that, and we'll chat again next week. Aidan, I touched off it with Darren in terms of the TAMS job, like, and he was saying in terms of the potential limit for those with over a certain number of cows that they mightn't be eligible for grant aid. I mean, that talk to me in terms of what we know, or what's been mooted, or kind of where the kind of lie, what's been said at the moment so far on that one.
Yeah, Jack. So just important to clarify, it's only in relation to the you know, funding for milking equipment or robots. So it's you can still apply for funding for collars or calf computers, calf feeders, or whatever else. It's only in relation to that. Okay. Yeah, it's so this measure, which we believe is going to be 120 cow maximum. If you're a sole trade, if you're operating on your own, not in a partnership, and not a woman farmer. And not a young farmer, and not in partnership. If you're in either of those things, my understanding is, and again, it's just my understanding, that you can go up to 160 cows and still get the benefit of it, you know, of the grant. Okay. So there's also going to be limits. There's also going to be limits on the number of milking units you can actually install. So rather than, you know, I initially was led to believe that you could get grant aid on, if you've a 10-unit parlour, as it is, you could get another grant aid in 10 more units and make it up to 20-unit parlour. I believe now it's only going to be on a maximum of 10 units and one robot, you know. So it's, and if you got grant aid, you got TAMS grant in the old, in the TAMS 2 for a robot, you can't even apply for TAMS 3 for a robot grant. So you know, really, Jack, I mean, it's hard on dairy farmers. Like, they don't want to do any effort to encourage expansion or make expansion easier on farmers, or for farmers to get bigger in any way. Like, that's my reading of it, you know. Why else are they doing it?
But Aidan, is some of this, you know, in terms of splitting up the cake a different way, in terms of, like, there is, new items on the list in terms of the fencing, the farm roadways, and potentially the underpasses that will be a benefit to some of your guys?
Yeah, Jack, there will be a benefit, but, like, the big ticket items on most dairy farmers, particularly new entrants or those that are expanding, is the milking facilities. Like, that's where most time is consumed. It's where most investment is made. And the fact that they're now, you know, the department are laying down the marker that we're not going to support any more than 10 milking units, like, I mean, that's for me, even if you had 100 cows, Jack, that's 10 rows. I mean, it's a lot. It's really only supporting farmers with 70 cows. To be honest, 70 to 80 cows that a 10-unit parlour would be ideal for. But any greater than 70 to 80 cows, you know, you would say from a labour and efficiency point of view, you shouldn't be milking more than 7 or 8 rows. Okay. So it's a negative move. I think they don't want to promote large farms or, you know, very large farms, a couple hundred cows and all the rest, and that's fine. I can kind of see their point there, but at the same time, the family farm should be supported, and this TAMS you know, is not doing that. Like, if you're putting the cap at 120 cows or the 10 units, like 120 cows, like it's 12 rows, Jack. It's just not for me. It's not at the races, like.
Okay, nice one on the TAMS. So lots more on that in the journal, Aidan. You had it online last weekend and you have it in print again this week. Aidan, meat price has taken a tumble, it's fair to say, and the expectations are that there might be more coming down the line if we're to believe what some of the processors and some of the chief executives are saying. But the weather piece, is fair to say, Aidan, is maybe compensating to some extent, you know, not justifying the lower prices. But the weather piece is a big play on some of your guys, and there's definitely more cows out of grass, you know, and getting a bit more grass into them. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely, Jack. I mean, and it's really the labour saving element of being able to get cows out of grass is massive. There's also huge health benefits from the cow. Like, you just don't have the problems that you would have had this time last year. I think we're facing into a storm. Storm Eunice is coming. Like, grass growth at the moment is, as some farmers are saying during the week, it's actually better than it was last July and August because of the drought, you know. So you're seeing fields green up very quickly after being grazed. Conditions are perfect. We're in for another dry week. You know, the coming week is going to be dry. It's going to be colder, though, so you'll see growth rates will probably decrease. But, I mean, most farmers will take that. It's saving cost, Jack, but, I mean, the drop in milk price is substantial. I mean, we've seen most co-ops drop by 6 cents a litre. Like, unheard of. You know, I know we're at record levels of milk price and all the rest.
But still,
I suppose the international trends are looking more positive. I know there's a lag phase, and they're falling a lot on where they were. But like, at least we know there's, I think we've hit the bottom in terms of global commodity prices, and they're rising now again. So you'd say there is a correction coming. We're experiencing it now, but I mean, there will be pressure on the crops to not to drop as much as they were initially suggesting they were going to have to drop for.
Correct. Okay. We'll come back to that again, no doubt, in the next couple of weeks. News this week, Aidan, on the department on the banding job. So this is related to the nitrates directive and how farmers, I suppose, effectively will kind of calculate their organic nitrogen for the nitrates scheme and for those involved in the derogation. What do dairy farmers need to do now?
So the change, which we flagged it a few weeks ago, Jack, in the Farmers Journal, but 2023 is now going to be used as a year that farmers can say, I'm going to milk, you know, my milk yield is going to be in band 2 or band 1, whatever they decide to do this year. And then they need to make sure that they actually achieve that. So up to that, we had to pick a historic milk yield, either the rolling 3-year average or 2022, the previous year's milk yield. And that would then classify what band we're going to be in. So the fact that farmers can select what band they can select 2023, it's only for this year. It'll help those, I suppose, that are on the margins and will say, well, I didn't know this rule was coming in and now I'm being penalized for it. So now they know at least, and they can then select what they're going to be at in 2023. What they need to do, Jack, is they need to log on to the ICBF website. So I got this clarification from ICBF during the week. Everybody has a login detail for ICBF, whether you're a Herd Plus member or not, whether you're a beef or dairy farmer or not. And within that, then there's when they get their login details, their milk yields will be presented. And there's a section on the website that they can then submit that to the Department of Agriculture. And when they've submitted, then that's their job done, they're finished. But obviously, you know, if you're selected in 2023, you're selecting what band you're going to be in 2023, you need to make sure that you deliver on that. Because if you don't, then if you exceed it, and you exceed and therefore exceed your nitrate limit, which is 250 kilograms if you're in a derogation, or 170 if you're not in a derogation, you could be penalized on your BPS or your BIS, as it'll be for this year. So it's important then that you honor what you've said you're going to do. And that, for some people, that'll mean feeding less meal, drying off cows earlier. They're kind of the main things, feeding more milk to calves.
So there are a couple of things, as you say, that guys can do, but ultimately, it's only a 1-year effect, Aidan. Am I right there? Yeah.
Yeah. So, Yeah, like the department will say, well, from 24 on, or it's, you've known this is coming, so it's up to you to decide, you know, to make changes in your farm to fit under the band. I think it's a good move. I welcome it from the department because it shows that, like, if you're a farmer that wasn't fully aware, like it was first mooted, I think, in March 2022. So you could have said, you know, I couldn't have had the opportunity to feed calves. I could have kept more calves in the farm, so on and so forth. So at least now you know what's coming, full line of sight. And it's important to make changes that are right for your own farm.
Okay, excellent. The other news, Aidan, this week, I see Tierlan have made changes to their fixed milk price offering. This is running, like, you know what I mean? What will that mean for the affected farmers?
Yeah, Jack, I suppose the first thing it's going to do is limit their exposure to the high milk prices. So, or sorry, to the impact of the losses associated, I should say, with the fixed milk price scheme, because at the moment they've locked themselves into a low fixed milk price scheme relative to where the prices are at the moment. Now, look, the affected farmers would say, God, if this was introduced last year, it would have been an awful lot better. It's a bit late to be introducing this now in terms of, you know, the differential is getting smaller because milk prices are falling. So what they're losing is less, but it's still positive. It limits their exposure to 35% of their 2021 milk. So if they have more than 35% of their 2021's annual milk supply in fixed milk schemes or the fixed milk support scheme for this year and next year, that'll be limited to 35%, and any milk above that will be getting full market rate. So it's, look, for me, my initial reading of it is that it's positive for affected farmers, and but, you know, their argument is it's probably, if this was introduced earlier, it would have been better for us again. And the fact that it's not costing Tierlan as much now as it would have to do this last year, so that's why they're doing it. You know, so there's a little bit of at both sides. Yeah. But to be fair, they're the only co-op that have made a real effort to try and solve the problem, as far as I can see. There are other co-ops that are badly affected. Farmers and other co-ops are badly affected, and not as much has been done. So to give Tierlan the credit where it's due, I think, you know.
Okay. Fertilizer, Aidan. You have a piece there in the focus this week on fertilizer. And effectively, if I'm reading it right, you're suggesting that, listen, you know, buy short. If you need it and you're going to use it, buy it. Don't have tons and tons sitting in the yard. Is that where we are?
Yeah, I think that's where it's at. Most farmers and you know, observers would agree that that's probably the best policy, because fertilizer prices, wholesale prices, are going to fall. Some indication that we could be down to €600 a ton for urea in, you know, May or June. Like, so there, but in order to get to that, there's product that needs to be washed through. So rather than buying product at much more expensive prices as they are now, that you don't need, you're not going to be using until April or May, only buy what you need now. Let that wash through the system, and then you should be back to more lower prices for when you need it later on in the year. I think that's probably the best thing we can do at the moment. There's no benefit in terms of if we're a certainty that prices are going to fall, there's no benefit in buying early. And availability will be there, I'd say. I don't think that's going to be an issue either. So last year we were concerned about availability, and I would have been advising then to buy it. Better to have it than not have it. But if that's not going to be a problem,
there are some indications that some companies could be short of some products, but in general, as you say, it looks like in the country the nitrogen and can is in the country relative to last year at least. Excellent. Aidan, I'm sure you chatted to John O'Loughlin about some of these issues, so let's have a listen.
And I'm delighted to be joined now by John O'Loughlin from Grassland Agro. John, you're very welcome to Farm Tech Talk.
Sound, Aidan, thanks very much.
You were up the north this week visiting farms as part of your sustainability programme. What are the things you're noticing up there? Any difference in terms of farming styles relative to south of the border?
Yeah, chalk and cheese, obviously. And like, I've been all over the north this week, and I haven't seen a single cow out, and no intention of letting them out either. So like, it's completely different, obviously. Different type of animal, different system, and you know, you'd be blown away. You go into the yard, and you'd say, God, there must be 1,000 cows, and with the amount of sheds that you'd associate with maybe a farm down south.
In fairness now, John, you know, in fairness, like, soil type is difficult, you know, and you've traveled that country in terms of soil type as well. It's not easy, you know. There's high rainfall areas, heavier soils. You know, the early spring grazing that you might do down the Golden Vale, it's not possible up in many parts of Northern Ireland.
No, absolutely not. And that's why they have the type of sheds and infrastructure and concrete in, you know. And I suppose really for them, their spring grazing is having real good quality first cut silage. And that was a very big challenge last year. And maybe it's having a big impact on milk production. A lot of third and fourth cuts were actually better than first and second cuts because of weather. So this is a big challenge, but entirely different type of system. An awful lot of positives that you could take out of it in relation to animal husbandry. You know, the kind of maybe 20% that we don't really focus on in a grazing system that you could possibly get a good few kilos of milk out. It's just managing the transition period, managing the dry period a little bit better, you know, slightly better facilities, you could argue. But listen, they're completely different systems. And you're right, the climate is very different. The soil type is very different. Now, there's some of the best land in the whole island in the north as well, but it's just slightly higher rainfall, of course. But an awful lot of slurry going out up here. And the one thing I would say, they're an awful lot better equipped in Northern Ireland for handling slurry than we are in the south. So you'd see an awful lot of nurse tankers, people drawn to fields, and less tankers actually going into field, which is very good from a soil compaction point.
And John, now to be fair, you know, obviously I'm up the north a good bit, covering all the counties as part of my role as dairy editor. One of the challenges I see, particularly in the north, is in relation to soil fertility. And not that it's necessarily bad, but sometimes nearly too good. And that's causing problems as well, particularly in relation to phosphorus. What advice would you give to guys and girls listening in terms of spreading slurry at the moment and where to go with that slurry?
Yeah, so it's a great point, Aidan. And I suppose the challenges are slightly different. Phosphorus is a very hard nutrient to build. But obviously, there's an awful lot more phosphorus coming into the system in concentrate feed. So like the average meal fed per cow could be maybe 2.8, 3 ton maybe at a push. So there's an awful lot more phosphorus coming onto the farm in the form of meal. And generally, what would have happened is that would be spread maybe on the milking platform or the ground closest to the farmyard, to the tank. And as we were saying, the investments in by contractors in equipment to ferry slurry that little bit further is really beneficial. So I suppose the key thing to answer your question is to do a soil test, understand where you need the nutrients. And as you said, use them in the right conditions, because if you've got a lot of rain technically you're not allowed to spread if there's an awful lot of rain in the forecast. But it's understanding field conditions, because listen, if you spread slurry and you're near field capacity, you can do an awful lot of detrimental harm to, number one, the soil structure and as well the soil biology. So you see an awful lot of earthworms could be killed as a result of it. So I suppose effectively using your soil test and then getting the slurry to maybe where it's needed, where the big offtakes are, your silage ground. And actually what we've found, Aidan, and this is something quite new, is that I suppose effectively carbon is the new nutrient. So we used to have NPK, we started talking a bit about sulfur, and now we have carbon and carbon-limited soils. And that's going to occur most often on where you're constantly removing organic matter from the soil or organic material, typically on your silage multi-cut system, maybe a zero grazing in the back end, no recycling of organic manures, and you're going to see a massive response. The research in Johnstown Castle would suggest up to 3 ton by priming that soil with carbon in the form of an organic fertilizer. I didn't say slurry, organic fertilizer, and that's the way we need to treat slurry going forward.
Right, command. Yeah, it's interesting to know. John, you mentioned fertilizer there, costs and availability. Where are we going to lie there? I mean, most farmers now, you know, they're seeing fertilizer, you know, the prices are held pretty much inside the merchants' yards. They know that the raw material prices is decreased and the price is going to fall later in the year. And there's a bit of a standoff emerging at the moment. What are your thoughts on that? Or just, you know, I know you're obviously working for a fertilizer company, so you've your own angle on it, but it's important to get that angle to know,
Of course, listen, we do have our own angle, but like we are on farm every day, I suppose, is what is unique about Grass and Agro, like, you know. So the co-ops and merchants are absolutely our customers, but we work hand in glove with farmers, which is a very unique point of difference to any other fertilizer company. And I suppose listen, we're all very much in the same boat. Like, we had a duty of care, a responsibility to the industry to ensure last year that fertilizer was available. We did that. We did the same thing. We tried to limit the quantity of stock that we bought in the back end, but we still had to buy some. Otherwise, there would be no material available for that big rush in March and April. So I suppose in simple maths, by the end of April, 50% of the annual fertilizer sales will be done.
Okay.
Currently, the drawings are very slow, which is understandable. You talked about that standoff. We will see an evolution of prices, absolutely, as, you know, those start to normalize. But in the short term, I would say that we could hit a real bottleneck. We see that ourselves in that drawings are very low. We suspect that there was a lot of business done in the back end. And there wasn't actually as much when you see the actual stats from the department. There's probably 30,000 ton over what is actually 26 ton to be exact, over what the normal purchases would be in the back end, where maybe people, you know, some people just always bought in the back end. For really tax reasons, to be honest. They just got into a cycle and they kept it going, which is about, it's less than 2% of the market for the year. There's been very small drawings so far this year because of what you discussed. And really what that's going to mean is that come March and April, there could be supply limitations. So we're certainly looking at it from the practical sense, and we are a little bit apprehensive about how it's going to go, because ultimately, you know, although fertilizer is at elevated prices, it's still, to spread that fertilizer to grow grass is still the cheapest feed. And listen, I suppose what we're doing on the sustainability program, Aidan, is, you know, we get so bogged down in the price, you know, a fiver or a tenner. But if the fundamentals are wrong, incorrect pH, P and K, 25% nitrogen recovery value. So even if you halved the current price and you say, oh, the price now is 900 and you said it's 450, you multiply that then by 4 because you're only getting 25% efficiency. You know, it's staggering. And we've seen maybe we let our eye off the ball last year on P and K. You know, so, and listen, me and you talked about it last year as well. Was it the right thing to do? It was the natural thing to do, given the prices, but was it the right thing? Probably not. So yeah, listen, there's a lot there. I would just be a little bit worried, and I suppose making sure that we in the fact that we have product available for everyone in those peak months.
And finally, before we leave you go, Sod Pod, where are you this week?
Yeah, so we still have the red carpet rolled out below in HQ in Limerick. You haven't managed to show up yet, but anytime that suits you, busy man. But we were down in Kildalton last week. We were chatting to James Ryan, vice principal, good character, doing a really good job. You know, like, listen, myself and yourself are involved in the Grass 10 lot, and, you know, you name it. And sometimes we're talking in jargon and figures and cover per cow. Made it just very simple, you know, very simple. And I think that's, it's well worthwhile checking it out. We also talked to the students down there. We were with Eva Hayes and Irish, asked us to go in and have a chat to them. It was their rag week now, so the interest in listening to Sile, which is commonly a boring boring one, wasn't necessarily too high. And this week as well, we're up the north. We're chatting to a group of farmers with United Feeds Dale Farm there, and got a great chat out of them. So yeah, very busy, same as yourself.
Right, folks, good job. Thanks to John O'Loughlin and Aidan for that chat. That's it for this week. Thanks for watching, and indeed, thanks for listening. Thanks to all our own specialists, Adam, Darren and Aidan. Remember, you can listen back to any of the recent webinars or podcasts on ifj.ie/podcast. We'll be back again next week. Until then, stay safe and safe farming.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping
and 365-day returns.